Good morning, Prabhus and Prabhis. I request you to turn your cell phones off for a moment.
Instance of the angle, if I put my hand this far, I can't see it either.
somebody's speaking over there, I can't hear anything. I don't know what they're saying, I can't understand anything. My senses are completely defective. This is mutual, every one of us. We all have senses that are not meant to understand higher things. So we have to take help from Shastra. Because Shastra is the eyes of the devotee. This is Shastra Chakshu. This is our vision. So having this kind of senses, how can we either prove or disprove the statements of the Srimad Bhagavatam? We can argue to death, but we don't have the elements to do. So this is what Prabhupada is saying, that the scientists, they can't disprove the statements of the Bhagavatam because they only have their limited tools, whether they're being mechanical or physical. Their tools cannot prove or disprove anything because they can be bewildered. Like the Shastra says that the moon is further away than the sun. So the sun is 93 million miles away and the moon is even further away. So according to what we see, the moon, or what the scientists tell, the moon is actually closer. But you can actually get a 5-rupee coin and put it in front of the moon and you can cover the whole moon. Does that mean that the coin is bigger than the moon? So this is the bewildering state of the universe. That is, it's meant to just throw the living entity in a perpetual confusion and to make them feel at home. Like, this is the place, this is enormous. Your Prabhupada once told a story, it was a Tamil Krishna Maharaj. He was making a statement. He was very close to Prabhupada, so Prabhupada had put him in his place. One day he said, in this, there are many universes emanating from Mahavishnu. Many universes. Every time he breathes out, all the universes come out. And out of those many universes, there is one particular universe that has its own sun. It's this, the Milky Way. And somehow or other, in that orbit of the sun, there is one planet, which is not the biggest. It's called planet Earth. And in that Earth, there is a city called, I think it was Los Angeles. And in that city, there are so many people. And out of all those people, there is one single one called Tamal Krishna. And he thinks he knows everything. And he thinks it's a big thing. So Prabhupada was putting him in his place. And we are all like that, really. Sometimes I've seen postcards. They show the Milky Way, the entire part of the galaxy. And then there is an arrow pointing somewhere and says, you are here. Really, we are insignificant. And this is the mercy of Krishna, that we are what we are, because we will never be anything but insignificant. I was wondering actually, when I was a young bhakta, how is it possible that if Krishna is everything, he can be insignificant? Because if he is infinite, so how can he has to be complete, so how can we be insignificant? So, and the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which I read, Prabhupada explained that we are the insignificant part or parcel of Krishna, and therefore he is complete, because through his living entities, through his jivas, he is also insignificant. But he continues to be infinite and infinitesimal at the same time. Prabhupada, and later, actually, I'm going to read the next verse because that's a purport by Prabhupada. In the same way, west and east of Vidyapita Varsha are two great mountains named Mount Yavan and Gandhamadana, respectively. These two mountains, which are 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles high, extend as far as Nila Mountain in northern Nishada in the south. They indicate the borders of Ilamita Varsha and also the Varshas known as Ketumala and Badrishala. Badrashva. Purport. There are so many mountains, even on this planet Earth. We do not think that the measurements of all of them have actually been calculated. While passing over the mountainous region from Mexico to Caracas, we actually saw so many mountains that we doubt whether their height, length, and breadth have been properly measured. Therefore, as indicated in Srimad Bhagavatam by Sukadeva Goswami, we should not try to comprehend the greater mountainous areas of the universe merely by our calculations. Sukadeva Goswami has already stated that such calculations would be very difficult even if one had a duration of life like that of Brahma. We should simply be satisfied with the statements of authorities like Sukadeva Goswami and appreciate how the entire cosmic manifestation has been made possible by the external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The measurements given herein, such as 10,000 yojanas or 100,000 yojanas, should be considered correct because they have been given by Sukadeva Goswami. Our experimental knowledge can neither verify nor disprove the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. We should simply hear the statements from authorities. If we can appreciate the extensive energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that will benefit us. So Prabhupada says that while passing over the mountainous region from Mexico to Caracas, we actually saw many mountains. So he, you see, this is before digital instruments, before GPS, before laser. Prabhupada was saying that they don't have the exact measurements. Now they may have the exact measurements, but so what? It's still just an extension of the fallible human eye, because we can't really understand. And he mentions here that Sukadeva Goswami is the authority to speak about things. So whether it's like the guru tells you this is a rope. Guru tells you it's a snake, it's a snake. Simply like that. If the guru happens to be Srila Prabhupada, it's a pretty accurate statement that we should accept through the authority what we see, what we perceive. Later on in this same section, well, here I also mention a mountain, Arivarsha, Kimpurusha Varsha, and Bharata Varsha. Bharata Varsha is considered to be India. And Kimpurusha is there's some living entities called Kimpurusha. Purusha means human, and Kimpurusha means like humans. So they're like humans, but they're not quite like, they look like humans, but they aren't. So this is the regions. There are different regions and different people inhabit these different regions. Like for example, when Vyasadeva retired to the Himalayas, actually Vyasadeva was born at a somewhat fortuitous connection between Satyavati and Parasamuni, great sage, was crossing the river, and she was Satyavati. Actually, was the daughter of King Vasu, but you know he had problem delivering in the womb of his wife because he was somewhere in the forest, and a fish ate the seed and had twins, and you know Satyavati was born out of a fish and adopted by a fisherman and his wife. And Parasamuni, she was actually given the job by her father to row a boat across the river. So Parasamuni had to cross the river and saw this woman who was not ordinary, and somehow said, I have a mission. I have to bring a sage into this world, and you seem like a suitable candidate. So I will, I would like to have a son with you." And she said, "But I'm a virgin, and how could I do that?" And she didn't want to displeased the sage, because sages had a lot of power and they could curse them, curse anyone. So he said, I don't think it's a good idea. Plus, plus there are people on both sides of the river watching us. Parasaguni said, well, I can fix all that. First of all, you will remain a virgin even after having a child. You have a child immediately. And he created a dense fog like that we see in Vrindavan, and you couldn't see anything. So they had a child, and Satyavati, being, she had a fishy smell from birth, from being born out of a fish. So she requested the sage to remove that scent. Women put perfume on, so she was into that. And she actually had a beautiful scent for the rest of her life. So Vyasadeva was born immediately into adulthood, just in a second. And he said, I have a mission. I have to go and perform austerities. I'm going to the Himalayas, and I will be there practicing austerities for as long as it takes me. So if you don't mind, if you need me, just call me. Just think of me, and I will show. So eventually, he disappeared. This is very typical of sages. They have no intentions of remaining docile and domesticated. They just have business to do and they go away. So eventually Satyavati had a problem with the family and called Vyasadeva to procreate. This is a long story anyway. But Vyasadeva, he had no intention of procreating. He was practicing austerities, but by the request of his mother, actually, he gave birth to this is jelly. This is what does to you, makes you, turns your brain into jelly. I can't remember most simple things. Duryodhana, there you go. There was Dhritarashtra, birth of Dhritarashtra, to Pandu, etc. So this, he was living in the Himalayas. And if you notice, in our parampara, there is, after Vyasadeva, is Madhvacharya. The Acharya is Madhvacharya. And that's 1,000 years difference. Usually, the Acharyas go from generation to generation. But there is 1,000 years between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya. Because Vyasadeva is still practicing austerities. It's not like he's moved, he went anywhere. He's still living in the Himalayas. Doing his thing. He's a powerful, very powerful sage, and he was empowered as a literary incarnation of Krishna, meant to divide the Vedas and write the instructions for all living entities. Prabhupada said that all facility is there, just like in the upper planetary systems, they have, the Prabhu yesterday was describing that there are fruits the size of an elephant that they break against the ground and they create rivers of nectar and so on. Actually, I have a similar experience, not exactly elephant-sized fruits, but I was living in Brazil. I did my Bhakta program in Recife, which is a city in the north of Brazil. I don't know if the Prabhus that never let Bharatavarsha know about Brazil, but it's a very tropical place. And the east, northeast of Brazil is the closest to Africa from the South American continent. And there were mango trees. The devotees were renting a property that used to belong to the governor of Brazil. What's the name of the state? The state is the capital.
Pernambuco.
There you go. He was the governor of Pernambuco. And The property was beautiful, a two-story building with beautiful design and 40 mango trees. They were all over the place, and there were jambo fruit, and there was coconuts, and cashew fruit, and breadfruit, and jackfruit, and sitafal, and just everything. There was every green fruit you can think of. And the mangoes during the summer will ripen and just fall. Matter of fact, one could not really walk around the little forest that we have because the mangoes will hit you in the head constantly. There was literally a river of mangoes. So the devotees will collect the mangoes during the morning, the ones who fell during the night, and make mango juice for breakfast for 40 people without using any water or sugar. Just squeeze mangoes for 40 devotees. It was like a river of mango. And mangoes are heating fruit, so you shouldn't take too much because it will give you boils and other skin problems. So take it in moderation. But there's no problem wearing Vrindavan in winter, so there's not that abundance of mangoes. In one of these planets, the other planets, there's a mango tree named Devachuta. They have names, and the fruits are the size of peaks of mountains. Imagine that's a, and no seeds. Good thing, no seeds. So the fruits in the upper planetary systems, they have no seeds at all. So they have no bodies to, like you eat guavas here in India, and you see worms inside. So there's no worms, there's no seeds. So again, I was saying that the opulence of the other planetary systems, the other systems, are that there is abundant ghee and butter and molasses and cloth and jewels and pretty much anything the earth is providing. And we are meant to live in the same, almost the same conditions. But because of sinful activities, the earth is refusing to give this. So instead, there is very little gold, and the government takes it, gives you paper, and then you give paper to a company, and they give you a plastic thing. So it's more and more removed from real wealth. Because real wealth means you can grow your own food. That's real wealth. You can grow your own cotton and make your own clothes. You can grow your own food organically. And what do you care what happened to the world, the financial state of Wall Street? Why would you care if you have tomatoes and potatoes in your garden? What does it matter what the Dow Jones is like, and you know, what the stocks and bonds and CDs are saying? The whole economy can collapse. You still have food. You still have clothes. You have a car. So don't try to be prosperous by taking advantage of the system. Just try to be Krishna conscious and live a simple life, and then you will have everything. Because Prabhupada set us up so we don't have to struggle. And you may think, oh, I'm struggling still. But look around. At least you're chanting the Maha Mantra, which is relieving you from anxiety. Look at everyone else. Well, maybe not in Vrindavan, because in Vrindavan things are different. But in the rest of the world where we live, in Santa Barbara, California. You can Google it later and you know, go to images and see what it looks like. It looks like a heavenly planet. It does. It's like beautiful weather. It's always 22, 23 degrees. Even in the winter, it's always sunny. There's the ocean and the mountains. You grow everything. Avocados and lemons and sitafal. You grow everything there. But people are reluctant to understand, to take up Krishna consciousness, because it's very difficult to convince someone in such a situation that the world is a place of suffering. They say, well, this world is a place of suffering. What do you mean by that? You know, the weather is great. I'm going surfing right now. Why should I care about, you know? It's not like you're talking to a miner making $6 a day in Wales. You're talking to some California guy who drives a convertible Mercedes Benz and lives in a mansion and has everything he wants. And yeah, that's very nice that you do this, but you know, no, the world is not a place of suffering. But death is coming. Death is coming for everyone. And death doesn't come alone. Usually comes with a lot of trouble and a lot of disturbance, misery. So we are not meant to experience tremendous misery if we are Krishna conscious. Because you have the ability to transcend your body. Those words, you're not the body, made me a devotee. I didn't need any further information about Krishna consciousness. A devotee preached to me and said, you're not the body. And I thought, wow, finally somebody tells me something useful. This is amazing. I want to know everything else. So this is how the devotees should live and understand the world. This world is a temporary place, and whether we are enjoying or suffering, we are going to have to go. This is just like a bus stop. So don't get too attached. There is nothing for you in that place. Just a few snacks and then you go. And no luggage. Your luggage will get lost somehow. So you take nothing. Because right now, we are all carrying our bags full of stuff, full of material desires. And we think, oh yeah, I'm going to sneak this through the division between this material and the spiritual world. I'm going to take my lust and my anger and my greed and everything else in whatever proportion. No, sorry. You may sneak a slightly larger bottle of shampoo through the airport security, but you're not taking anything through the Vaikuntha customs. They'll take everything away and they will send you back, matter of fact, to the back of the line until you get it right. So please remain in your position. Don't try to jump the gun and be someone you're not. Just from wherever position you are, try to chant Hare Krishna, try to be a Vaishnava, and everything will be fine by the mercy of Guru and Gaura. So I hear that today is the disappearance of Srila Lakshmidas Thakur. I was told that about 5 minutes before the class began. So I have no idea of the life of Lakshmidas Thakur. I believe he wrote the Karma Karuna song. That's my name. Yeah. But that's about it. So if anyone knows anything about Lakshmidas Thakur, besides the fact that he was a great Vaishnava and we celebrate both appearance and disappearance, was for a Vaishnava, there is no difference. Like this. We were walking with my wife yesterday, going near the Krishna Balaram tree, and there was a little puppy, a dog, who was dead, probably dead. And she was lamenting. I said, don't lament. He's better off than we are. He died in Vrindavan. What's the big deal? He's gone. He's with the Lord now. And we are still struggling, trying to get a taxi without being cheated. So thank you very much. And I ask if you have any questions or comments, then you're welcome to deliver them now.